Extra time.
Hello and welcome to the Extra Time podcast. It's me, your host, Patrick Van Straten. And today I'm joined by Henry Hill. Hello, Henry.
Hello, Pat. How are you, my friends?
I'm very well. How are you? It's been a while.
Yes, it absolutely has. No, I'm good. Good. I was just saying to you, getting ready for a holiday to Italy this weekend. So just need to scrape through a few more days of football chat and then I can switch off. Although I was saying yesterday, I do kind of want to like suss out a Tammy Abraham Roma shirt because I think that'd be a pretty cool one for the collection. Yeah. But yes, I'm excited.
Though it does say a lot about your workload at FD that going to Rome to run a marathon feels like a rest for you.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. I think it's just good to branch out to other sports every now and then. I think maybe that's the real holiday.
Well, I know somebody else who feels that way. Joe Tomlinson, the resident cricket lunatic, rugby enthusiast. Are you an F1 guy? You must be.
Do you know what? I absolutely wasn't, and I was against the concept. But I have now been fully turned and swayed by Drive to Survive. And I'm sure I'm not the only person that has been turned on to F1 by Drive to Survive. But whenever I tweet about F1 now, all the F1 gatekeepers flow into the mentions, just like, you can't be a real F1 fan if you've got onto the back of it off of Drive to Survive. Can we not just enjoy it? You know, like, I didn't used to like the sport. Watching that made me like the sport, and I'm now enjoying it a little bit. So can we just stop gatekeeping F1 quite so much? But yeah, it's all right, mate. It's not too bad. I even shot some F1 content the other day for Sky, and I quite enjoyed it.
I was going to say, you're not only a armchair Formula 1 fan, but now a paid Formula 1 pundit. So you're having the last laugh, Joe.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, there's an interesting sort of definition of pundit, asking Martin Brundle how many cats and dogs can he name in 30 seconds.
But Joe, you're now so synonymous with Sky. You now present everything on Sky to the point that every time I see your face, I get an urge to go and put an accumulator bet on.
That's good. I mean, that's a great thing. Why not sign up? In fact, it's not necessarily a great thing, is it? Because gambling isn't good. But, you know, go and put a bet on if you want to put a bet on. I'm not telling you to do it. I'm not telling you not to do it.
This is all getting cut. This is all going
down. Yeah,
absolutely. Joe, what are the odds on you being the next Soccer Saturday presenter?
Great question.
0%.
I've asked Joe this as well. I think Joe would be great.
It'd be impossible. It's impossible. I mean, I think it's probably one of the hardest jobs in media trying to replace Jeff Stelling. So, yeah, it's 0% chance.
So this isn't an Extra Time exclusive that you can.
No, there's absolutely no such thing.
Well, look, if you would like Joe to be the new face of Soccer Saturday, then make sure that you email Sky, that you tweet at them, that you let them know how you feel about it. Because I think we would all like to hear Joe reporting the scores at, I don't know, Doncaster or whatever. You are actually very knowledgeable, I'd say, about lower league football. I think that you'd be good at the job.
I would try my best, but unfortunately, I'm not going to get it. And I'm not ready to get it just yet, but maybe in
just
the future,
yet.
You never know.
Just yet.
By yourself.
What a great qualification. Okay, let's move on. Let's get into the podcast, guys, because obviously international break coming up. I hate the international break, though I know this is the best of the international breaks normally. It's where some things are actually decided. But I don't care. So today we're going to talk a little bit about club football because there are some interesting things going on in the news at the moment. Some interesting news on some free agents who could be changing hands. So I thought that today we could take a look at Franck Kessié. I've found different sources include the acute accent on the last E. Others don't. Not entirely sure what's going on there. But apparently he is in the latter stages of a move to Barcelona, according to Fabrizio Romano. It looks like that's going to get wrapped up. And it's raised some interesting questions about what exactly the Blaugrana are intending to do this summer. We've also got Paulo Dybala, who is currently being courted by basically every big club in Europe that needs a forward. So I thought we could talk about the destinations of these two free agents, talk about what it means for the clubs who are signing them / trying to sign them, and maybe look at some others as well. Plus, at the end, we might have a bit of a bonus from Frank Lampard, whose current travails at Everton are very enjoyable, in my opinion. So, Kessié, let's talk about him. It looks like he's completed a medical with Barcelona, according to Di Marzio and Romano. A verbal agreement has been reached, according to Romano, for €6.5 million net guaranteed salary, which is hefty. That is hefty.
2026?
Oh, boy. But, I mean, look, positive things here. 4-year contract, not that crazy. He's 25. He's going on a free transfer. Barcelona do need reinforcements in the engine room. I think we can agree on that. But Joe, I saw a tweet from you where you had misgivings about this particular move. Can you explain that to me a little bit?
Yeah, I suppose misgivings is kind of a fair way of putting it, really, isn't it? I just think, look, Barcelona have an awful lot of young, talented central midfielders, thinking of Frenkie de Jong, Pedri, Busquets, Gavi, Nico. And, okay, Busquets is the guy who's aging out. They're clearly thinking about the future of that defensive midfield position. And I think maybe not just in my head, maybe in your head, maybe in a lot of people's head, the future of that role was potentially Frenkie de Jong, right? He came from Ajax as this sort of hybrid centre-back come defensive midfielder who had unbelievable progression numbers, even better dribble numbers. And we were thinking, oh, here's the heir to the throne. It doesn't feel like Xavi wants to use Frenkie de Jong as a defensive midfielder. I put this tweet out yesterday, I think, or on Tuesday, as you're listening to this. And a lot of the replies were, well, Kessié is being signed as the replacement for Busquets. And I don't know how you guys feel about this, but I don't feel like Kessié is a natural heir to Sergio Busquets in that defensive midfield role. I know he's had minutes there this season, and he's extremely tidy on the ball, isn't he? We know that, but I think quite a lot of Kessié's best work gets done in and around the box. Maybe that's a little bit unfair to say, but, you know, I think he's top 9% of midfielders in Europe for touches inside the box, isn't he? Top 15% for progressive passes received. So then we're sticking him at the back end of a Barcelona side that really want to play nice, pretty football under Xavi. And I feel like it's a bit of a, I don't know, square peg, round hole maybe, just because he's a free transfer. And I don't want to be harsh on Frank Kessié because I think he is a good midfielder, but I think it's a weird fit for Barcelona, and I think it's an even weirder decision from Frank Kessié to go to a club that are in the midst of a rebuild with an incredibly talented young roster of central midfielders when there are other options on the market that are potentially better sides right now that will also need a central midfielder in the future. I'm open to be changed, though, mentally, if you two disagree with me.
Well, I think I'm the kind of designated Kessié doubter at Football Daily, but that doesn't mean I think he's a bad player. It's just that I constantly hear him described, and I think this Busquets comparison, it's part of this, as something that I've just never seen him be. Like, Chris and I disagreed on a show recently where he was saying he's like a tempo-setting midfielder. I don't think he's that at all. He's certainly not a defensive midfielder. He's having his best defensive season ever at the moment. 3.7 tackles and interceptions per game. That's not very many. Busquets puts up more than that in a side with more possession and always has done historically. And when it comes to passing forward as well, Kessié passes into the final third, 3.7 a game. Best ever was last season with 5. Busquets is currently at 7.4. His best ever is 10.5. So I look at this and I'm like, if they're going to play Kessié to replace Busquets, he doesn't do the defensive side. He doesn't do the passing side, which is not to say there's not a role for him. Like, I think there absolutely could be a role for him. The question is, do you give it to him at maybe the expense of Pedri, of Gavi?
But it's a rotation role. It's a rotation role, isn't it? Like, let's be frank, he's not going to be able to start every week, every game with the quality of midfielders they've got in there. And Xavi might well want to play at a slightly higher intensity next season and think that I need to rotate these players. You know, Gavi's, what is he, 17? Pedri's like 19. So he might be thinking, I can't just rely on these players. Sure. But if you're Kessié, you're happy to come in to what, play, I don't know, 18 games a season maybe?
Yeah, I mean, but they're not paying him bench wages, are they? Like, they're committing an awful lot of money to him. Henry, I feel like you are, for some reason, I have a picture of you as somebody who knows a lot about Milan. Can you shed any light on this particular transfer? Because, like, maybe there is something in Kessié's game here that I'm missing, or maybe there's some role at Barcelona that he's the ideal fit for, but I'm not sure. I think he's a good signing. I just don't think he's a game-changing one, and they're kind of paying him game-changer money.
Yes, I agree. I don't understand it. I mean, I think, obviously, for the player, fantastic, I think. Although, it is a shame. He did say that he wanted to stay at Milan forever, etc. I think it's a club really in the ascendancy, certainly in the Paolo Maldini era, and I think, basically, his agent's the one that's been kind of tinkering away to try and get him to go elsewhere to the sounds of it to get a bit more money. So, but I mean, look, great deal for him if all is said and done. But I'm kind of with Joe on this one. I don't see. I mean, on Continental Club the other day, I said it, if he is there to essentially replace Frenkie de Jong, then Barca would probably have to look to sell de Jong. I got absolutely slated in the comments for suggesting that. But part of my thinking is that Barca need to raise capital. According to La Liga's latest salary cap, they have to... they can only spend 25% of anything that they save next season. Their cap is kind of crazy. If you look at the spending cap relative to Real Madrid, etc. Obviously, they do have a new deal with Spotify coming in. It looks like naming rights for the club, whatever. So if they are looking to maybe sell players, then this deal would make more sense. And I think the sacrificial lamb in this regard would be Frenkie de Jong, someone with great value in the market. And they can essentially get a similar-ish player in Kessier through the door to fill that void. I obviously would not like to see De Jong sold. I think he's a fantastic operator. I think he's been harshly criticised at certain points. And this idea that there's a Busquets replacement out there is a difficult... it's impossible to say because Busquets is so good. You're not going to get another Busquets. Do you know what I mean? I think we need to maybe move away from that narrative. So perhaps what Xavi's doing is trying to put together two players that could fill the void of Busquets, because I think realistically that is more likely to happen, because he's sort of a generational central defensive midfielder. So for me, it doesn't make sense to bring in Kessier if he's going to be competing with the likes of Gavi, certainly Pedri, even Nico Gonzalez. I think he's done enough to show that he has a future in and around that squad. And that leads me to think that maybe De Jong's the person who's in danger. So that's the only... Ugh. That's where my mind is. But I think that would be really disappointing if that happens.
I mean, what I will say about Kessié is that Kessié does have the combination of athleticism and technique, which it does look like Xavi is going to prioritise. Like, I think we all wondered when Xavi came in whether he would try and recreate Guardiola ball, where it was a bunch of lightweight guys who were just so incredible on the ball that it didn't really matter that they didn't have kind of overwhelming physical ability. But it actually doesn't look like he's playing that way. Like, his team is much more expansive and harder working. They're playing a much more modern brand of football. It's almost like this Barcelona side under Xavi have maybe absorbed some of the lessons they got taught by German teams, particularly Bayern Munich, towards, you know, in the years after Guardiola, where that sort of dynamism was starting to seep out of the Spanish game and you were starting to get more of it in the Premier League and in Germany. So in that sense, I could see the kind of logic in Kessier. Like, he's a good dribbler. He's really solid on the ball. Like Joe says, he's a big presence in the final third. 0.2 XG and XA per 90. That's in the top quarter of midfielders. I mean, admittedly, so are De Jong, Gavi, Nico and Pedri by that metric. But maybe it goes up when he goes to a better, more attacking side and when he's playing in a midfield three as opposed to a midfield two. Who knows? Yeah, so I don't know. You can see it. You could definitely see him playing for Barcelona, and he's not going to make the team worse, but I'm not convinced that he really makes it better. And I know it looks like they're kind of shopping in the free agent market this summer, I guess. You know, strong rumours that Azpilicueta and Christensen will be joining them. Does that make sense to us? I mean, I guess I look at it and I think if we're going for free transfers, I look at someone like Boubacar Kamara, and I think, okay, that's a guy who can cover you at centre-back. Huge defensive output. He's only 22. He can also pass the ball forwards. That looks like a more logical signing to me in a way than Kessier. And certainly a more logical signing if I want to give Busquets some rest. I guess I don't really know entirely what the plan is. Joe, if you were running Barcelona, what would be your priorities this summer? Do you think they're going to get Christensen and Azpilicueta? And do you think that those are going to be enough for Xavi to continue to evolve this side? Because look, right now they look like the best side in Spain, but they're not going to win the title. And they're still going to be quite a long way off the best sides in Europe, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think there are defensive problems with Barcelona. I think, to be honest with you, Andreas Christensen on a free is a very good signing. I really think that is good. That is good work by the Barcelona board to get that deal over the line, to convince him to not sign a contract with a very clearly better side in Chelsea than Barcelona right now is impressive work, isn't it? I do still think there's slight problems in the fullback areas. You know, Jordi Alba's still put up 1,800 minutes of football this season. Obviously, we've seen Danny Alves come back as well. And it's kind of like, well, you know, what's the future planning of this? We've obviously, Sergiño Dest is up there. He's put up 1,300 minutes. So I still think there's a player there. But Jordi Alba's side feels like eventually they're going to need to find a really long-term successor in there that looks better than like Jordi Alba looks this season. I also think that they might well think about trying to do something with Adama Traore and Trinquao, something a little bit tricky there. Because Adama Traore, since he's been at Barcelona, he's actually been all right, hasn't he? You know, like, he's been better than I thought he would be. But then again, you know, it's one thing cutting through La Liga defences, another thing cutting through Premier League defences. No offence to the La Liga fans out there, but it is just a different ball game. It's true. And I think they might consider like a swap deal, a direct swap deal, with Adama Traore for Trinquao. I wouldn't be surprised to see that happen at all. And I think both clubs would be relatively happy to see that offer on the table. I think Wolves would probably accept it, given the way Bruno Lage wants to set up, and Adama Traore not necessarily being a starter and Trinquao being slightly more versatile. And I think Barcelona would prefer the progressive nature of Adama Traore in terms of wingers. So I can see that happening. And I could also see, I think there might be a last-minute U-turn and Ousmane Dembele stays.
I can see that happening, trying to convince him, right?
Exactly. The rumblings isn't there. The slow rumblings that, you know, oh, he might stay now, and you see that in the Catalan press, and that wouldn't surprise me at all. I do think it's really crucial they lock down Ronald Araujo to a new contract. I think if they allow him to leave for free to Chelsea or Manchester United or wherever he's linked at the moment, I think that would be a pretty major error given the quality of him at 23 years old and the ageing of that backline, the likes of Piqué and Busquets in front of him, Jordi Alba to the side of him. So I think in terms of priorities, it'd be lock Ronald Araujo down to a new deal, make a decision on Adama Traore, get Christensen completed, and then probably... I don't think there's loads more to be done. Like, De Jong off permanently, maybe. Like, little things like that. Like, cut some of the dross out of the squad.
Yeah. I'm with you, Joe. I don't actually think the squad's too far away from being very competitive. No. Certainly, if you look at the forward additions, certainly for next season, Aubameyang, Ferran Torres, that forward line does look electric. I mean, that Clasico performance, I'm not going to base everything on that, but that was so impressive. They're now, what, averaging 3+ XG in their last four games. That scoring goals are fun at the moment. So I don't think they're too far away. And Araujo has shown that he can slot in at right back and play pretty competently if needs be. So yeah, get Christensen through the door. What a signing that is. Interestingly, a lot of people were quite negative about that in the comments when we did that on... talked about this briefly on ERU, so I'm interested to see what people think again.
He's got a bad rep, man, and he's definitely a better player than Eric Garcia. It's just like, what's the downside?
I mean, I guess one of the issues is that people feel he's played his best football in a three, right? He is not... he's not immobile, but he's not the most mobile. And I guess people also felt in the Premier League like he never... maybe beefed up as much as you wanted.
Yeah,
he didn't quite have that presence. But that's going to be way less of an issue in Spain. Yeah. Like, I mean, that's not just a stereotype. It is less of an issue. Somebody like Piqué, for example, is one of the best centre-backs in the world at one stage and was always super dominant in Spain, but was never, you know, a real kind of physical specimen in the way that other defenders are. I think that Christensen seems like quite an obvious PK replacement, because PK's 35 now and they are going to need to move on from him. And I agree, Garcia is, he's one of those guys that Barcelona just got fixated on and decided they were going to have at all cost. And he's Spanish, you know, like that. He's got that going for him, I guess.
And obviously, but once you get rid of some of, like, I don't see Luke de Jong staying beyond this summer, you know, Martin Braithwaite, and then you think like Ansu Fati to come back as well. He's only played 200 minutes of football this season, isn't he? And I think we kind of forget about the quality of Ansu Fati in that front line when we were talking about it earlier. So maybe the situation is the key signing is the long-term successor to Busquets. And maybe Xavi is thinking that he's going to play some different dynamic system where he doesn't rely on a defensive midfielder in the same way he's relied on Busquets going forward. Either that, or he asked Busquets yet again to put up the most minutes in the squad, as he is this season. And, you know, he's only 33. Like, he might be able to do it for a couple more years, just kind of ticking the ball over in there, because he's been much better this year. We were kind of saying he was in the midst of a slump, wasn't he? But I think he's kind of arrested that now. And obviously, the long-term success is going to be needed. But I still see Busquets playing 25-plus league games under Xavi next season, which is
yeah,
which is kind of crazy to think, isn't it? But it's going to happen. I don't see any other solution.
I mean, can I just say one more thing on Barcelona? There's that obviously that rumor today that Rafinha, they're looking at him quite seriously from Leeds United. That's what Fabrizio Romano said. And that would just be, if they went and spent 30, 40, 45 million on him next summer, sort of busting most of their wage budget, I think that would be a real shame. If you consider like the progress they're making at the moment, like you said, Fati, I'd almost forgotten about Fati, which is kind of crazy when you think about it, with all their attacking flair at the moment. So yeah, if that would be like a classic Barcelona thing to do, is to go and spend quite a lot of money on Rafinha. So I hope they don't do that. I hope they just focus on the quality squad that they've got at hand.
And really invest in that left back, I think, as the heir to Jordi Alba. I think that's absolutely necessary. I still hold out hope for Serginho Dest as the long-term solution at right back. And as Joe said, you know, like Adama Traore's form means that you probably could go to a wing-back system and basically be fine. So I don't know. I would probably put money in the left back zone, but I do feel like maybe they missed a trick with Brozovic. It seems like Brozovic was meant to be signing a new contract with Inter. We haven't had that totally confirmed, I think, but he was going to be going on a free this summer. If you wanted to find the most natural successor to Busquets in world football, Brozovic is probably the best fit. And they could have got him, I assume. Like, I don't... Obviously, Inter are in a good moment, but I don't think that... I still think Barcelona have enormous drawing power, especially when you've got Xavi in charge. It feels like he would have been a really smart signing for them, but I don't know. We'll see what happens
it's
with them. At least,
but either way, Franck Kessier doesn't make the most sense.
No, but at least now they've got a system. If Xavi has an idea of what he wants and Kessier is the guy who he thinks is going to make sense for the way he wants to play, then it becomes a lot more sensible, right? Like, then if Xavi's playing a system next season where we see Kessier, who's playing the majority of minutes and he's looking really useful, then I think we'll all say, you know what, free transfer, great. And for once, for the first time, since maybe, I don't know, certainly since Enrique left, it looks like Barcelona do have a kind of coherent plan, or at least are going to let Xavi do what he wants to some degree. And they've needed somebody to have a vision and to commit to that vision for quite a long time. Shall we move on to another player then? Because this guy was actually linked with Barcelona for a long time, and that's Paulo Dybala. It looks like he's not going to renew his contract at Juventus after the Bianconeri changed the offer that they had put on the table for him. He's 28 now. He's been at Juve for 7 years. He's won 5 titles. And the thing is about Dybala, I feel like I never really know whether he's having a good season or a bad season. Sometimes I check in and I'm like, Jesus, Dybala's absolutely flying this season. Other times I check in and it's like, oh, Dybala's got 3 goals this season. Don't really know what's happening there. But the fact that a player of this quality is available on a free transfer this summer is quite exciting. Henry, I'm going to come to you first on this. What do you think about Dybala exiting Juve? Do you have any thoughts on where he should go? What do you think of the player overall? Because Dybala's quite a divisive player at this point.
I feel like I'm about to get killed for this, but I just, as you said, the fact that he's available on a free transfer, that makes him a very enticing prospect, but I don't think he's this world beater. I mean, I know he's in sort of top 10 Juve scorers in Serie A of all time as of last weekend or something like that.
Yeah.
But I really don't think he's... it was so weird when he won like the Serie A player of the year when Ronaldo had scored something like 25, 30 goals or something that one season. He clearly does catch the eye over there. I mean, this season, 8 goals, 5 assists and 1,500 minutes in a fairly sort of dull squad, it must be said. Under Max Allegri.
That's an understatement, isn't it? Oh, Jesus.
Dull. Well,
dull.
I'll let the audience make up their own minds. But he is great. And I think he has moments of brilliance. But I do just think that he can be defended against quite easily by the very best defenders. I can't remember a time that he's sort of torn apart a quality side in the Champions League, for example. I think certainly against the bottom half of Serie A, he does have his way quite a lot of the time. He's going to be demanding massive wages, isn't he? I mean, it was talk of like 10 million euros per year or something like that, the extension that he was going to get at Juventus. Yeah. I mean, we're looking at it now, like, it's been well over 250k, something like that. I think Man United were quoted something stupid when they tried to tempt him previously. So I think for that kind of money, maybe proceed with a little bit of caution. And at 28 years old, he has to go somewhere where he's going to be the star. And that does make it a little bit tricky, because if you look at all the big boys, I don't necessarily see where that happens. Like Manchester City, that would make sense. Don't get me wrong.
That'd be interesting. That'd be interesting.
It would be interesting, but he's not a guaranteed starter there by any means, any stretch of the imagination. So, yeah, I'm intrigued to see what he does next. I mean, talk of Tottenham, Fabio Paratici, I don't think that's going to happen at all. I'm not sure they have the money to give him the contract that he necessarily wants or that he would want to go there. I think that Kulusevski is the perfect move, quite frankly, for between Juve to Spurs. I think Dybala is, at this point in his career, a step above. So, yeah, he's a good player. He does shine in moments, but I'm just a little bit nervous and I'm not sure where he is
going to go. Just you're so keen to avoid getting shit in the comments. Just say he's crap. Just say you think he's crap.
What did you call him earlier? Just a man or something like that.
Yeah, but I mean, he's like a little anime boy. He's you know, he's been around forever.
He's not crap.
He's weirdly old now. I think it's one of those things where he could like pitch up in the Premier League and genuinely be one of the best players in the division. I wouldn't be shocked if that happened, if he got the right fit. Like, but also I wouldn't be surprised if he went to like Atletico Madrid and was just kind of so-so. I really don't know what to make of him. Like,
has a player ever stunk of PSG more than Paulo Dybala on a free transfer?
So you think Mbappe out, and Dybala in the menu.
100%, mate. It's going to be... Oh, I can picture the image now on the PSG posters of Paulo Dybala and Paul Pogba doing that little finger touch that they used to do at Juventus, both wearing PSG shirts on free transfers. I think it's nailed on. I don't see anywhere else that Paulo Dybala goes. I'm willing to defend him a little bit more than you boys, potentially.
No, I defend him. I like the player.
I think I still think Paulo Dybala is like one of not the truly elite, like the top bracket, like Mbappe, Haaland level forwards, but I think he's only in the bracket below. Like even across the last like three seasons, his underlying numbers have still been really consistent, haven't they? Over 4 shots per 90, not from the greatest positions, by the way, but still over 2 key passes, 0.6 expected goals. Like they're pretty good.
They're good.
And
they're very good.
For free, they're very good. Yeah, PSG won't be asked about his wages, given Mbappe's leaving. I just think that's a really good fit for like both of them. And like that fluid front three of like Messi, Dybala and Neymar.
It's a terrible idea.
It does no work, does it? But it's so PSG.
They're going to lose. They're going to get to the point, though, that... just to get sidetracked on the PSG thing. If PSG signed Pogba and Dybala this season... They'll become the worst they've been in years. Like, I mean, despite all the quality in that squad, like, those are exactly the two signings they shouldn't make, you know? Yeah. Like, I love the players, but it's just... people are talking about Pochettino this season. People are really criticising him and saying, look at these players, how can he not make it work? And I think it might not be possible to make it work. That's the answer to me.
It's incredibly difficult, isn't it?
It might not be possible. I honestly think the best thing for them might be to just have like Neymar and Messi playing as a front two, and then everybody else in the side is just like, you know, a hard man defender. They need like Burnley with Neymar and Messi on top. That's what they need at this point.
The thing is, I think destinations for Dybala are limited. Like, I'm not sure Atletico Madrid really fits, to be honest with you. Like, especially given the emergence of Joao Felix towards the back end of this season more consistently. You know, like, Dybala's picked up 5 injuries across the course of this season already, 5 separate muscle problems. I could see that being a bit of a worry for Diego Simeone. Correa's, you know, in the form of his life there as well. Barcelona's a no-go since they've signed Aubameyang. They've got Fati, Torres coming through the door. Adama Traore is going to be there. Real Madrid... again, given that Mbappe is likely to arrive, potentially
I can
Haaland.
See it,
what? Where? What? Real Madrid? Mbappe?
I reckon Real Madrid would maybe put in an offer. I really don't see why.
But where does he play? Like, he plays, like, there's arguments to say that they might be able to squeeze a front line together of Mbappe, Vinicius, and Benzema. Well,
Bale's going to be like, gone. Where does Dybala really play? I don't think it's to have sort of four quality options in there. Vinicius, Benzema,
I'd be so
Mbappe.
Surprised at that.
Henry, really he'd obviously be a great signing for them to have instead of, like, Asensio, Isco, Bale, but he's not going to accept that. And the money they're going to have to pay, there's absolutely, like, who are they going to bench there? Come on.
And then, like, you look in the Premier League, I agree that I think Spurs have the best connections and a really good opportunity to get him, and he might really fancy working with Conte again and working with Paratici. You never know. But I think that's only realistic if Harry Kane was to leave, to be honest with you. I don't see happening.
Pat, that argument about who's he going to bench, like, we can make the same argument for Manchester City, but yet we're also saying that it makes more sense that he could go to Manchester City.
But at least we know Manchester City are looking for a striker. Like, I agree. I think at Manchester City, we accept that basically everyone in their front line gets benched at some point. That is not the case, I think, for Real Madrid. Like, they're not going to bench Mbappe and they're not going to bench a fit Benzema. And,
I'm convinced they are still going after Haaland. Like, I'm convinced that somewhere in there...
Dybala's not a striker. Dybala's more of like a right winger.
Sure, but if they get Mbappe in, they're not in, they're not going to get rid of Benzema. They're going to be playing Mbappe on one side, and they're not going to get rid of Vinicius. Like, the most obvious person for Dybala to bench would be Vinicius, but they're not going to do that, partially because that's the role Dybala is least suited to. So what they could do then is play Mbappe on the left and play Dybala on the right. But I don't really know why you'd do that when Vinicius has been one of their two best players this season. Like,
Arsenal? That's a club looking for a striker. Yeah.
Well, I mean, he fits the hole really well if he's got the strength. Because actually, the thing from Lacazette recently, I noticed it against Liverpool, and I've certainly noticed it in quite a lot of other games, especially against Wolves. Lacazette has just been, like, rolling off defenders really well. Yeah. Like, I mean, he's always had great lower body strength, but lately it feels like he's been, you know, really eating his spinach or something, and he looks really strong. I mean, he's still fading physically. He doesn't have the pace anymore, but his strength with his back to goal and he's phenomenally good technically. Those things have really contributed to Arsenal's game, right? They've really improved, especially Martinelli. Dybala would be a great fit in terms of big shot numbers, much bigger shot numbers than Lacazette, twice as many shots per game. Very creative, good dribbler. His pressures are actually very similar.
I cannot see Arteta wanting him at all. I cannot.
I wouldn't be talking about this if it weren't for the fact that a few Italian sources are suggesting that Arsenal have tried to open talks. I think it'd be an interesting option to explore. I think that he's probably out of Arsenal's price range. I think he'll probably get better offers, and ultimately there might be a better player available. Like, so for instance, Barcelona might get rid of Memphis Depay. That would be quite an interesting option for Arsenal as a number nine, I think. Yeah. And I do see exploring the options as a sensible thing, given that it feels like a lot of the strikers on the market are not totally convincing.
I agree, and are very overpriced.
There's
a bit of a dearth behind, like, the super elite, like where Haaland is and like where Mbappe is, where like Arsenal just aren't living at the moment. Man United aren't living at the moment. Like, United are looking for a set. They're going to be definitely looking for a striker this summer, given that Ronaldo is going to be 38, Cavani's gone, Greenwood is unavailable, Rashford seemingly doesn't play through the middle and is potentially, you know, we saw those things from his camp potentially about having his head turned a little bit about offers away from the club. So United are going to be desperate for a striker. And I don't see where that is in the market. And I don't see Dybala as a particularly good fit for the role. But, you know, I think on a free, is it less risky than paying 70 million for Darwin Nunes, for instance, or something that somebody's going to end up doing, aren't they?
Well, or, you know, look, if Everton get relegated, then obviously Calvert-Lewin and Richarlison, like Richarlison's linked with Man United, Calvert-Lewin linked with Arsenal, but would also make a lot of sense for United. Like, that would be great, but he's going to cost an arm and a leg, even if they get relegated, and he's had absolutely horrific fitness this season. Now, I still love the player and think he would be a better fit for those two sides than Dybala. But if you're looking at a guy who sat out much of the season who's still going to cost you kind of 60 mil and huge wages, you do look at Dybala and think, maybe we just try and make it work with this guy who is clearly talented and has put up numbers for the best part of a decade now in Serie A.
Do you want to know like a joke shout that I wonder whether somebody might go, like, he's only been there a season. I wonder whether somebody might go for Tammy. Like, I know that he's becoming a bit of a cult hero, but that lure of a return to the Prem, like, say Man United were after a striker to play, like, week in, week out under Erik ten Hag, like, would they have a little nibble at Tammy? Bring him back, homegrown? Like, still very, very young, isn't he? Still only 24? Like, he's putting up, what is it, 0.6, 0.7 non-penalty expected goals under in a Jose Mourinho side that's pretty crap in Serie A.
I mean, look, I don't know. I think that probably with Tammy, he only gets his move back when he's got a year or so left on his contract. But also, I think, I know they're totally different players, but I think something about the fact that he was sold on by Chelsea will recall Lukaku in Man United fans' minds. And I think, and historically we have seen
Man United bounce.
Yeah, well, I think he would have made a lot of sense for Arsenal last summer, but I can also see why they didn't do it, because they had such big areas of need, right? And so had Lacazette and Aubameyang. But it definitely looks like a miss by a bunch of clubs. I mean, he's going to come back to the Premier League at some point, but it does feel weird at the moment, because there are a lot of promising strikers, but the only one out of all of them that I really, really love, and he's going to be the most expensive, is Osimhen.
Yeah, he's amazing.
You're not paying 100 mil for Osimhen. You're just not. Even this season, he's had a couple of serious injuries as well, with that, you know, orbital fracture and stuff. Like, I love the guy, but you're not paying 100 million pounds for a guy who went there for 70 mil a couple of years ago. It's just a really strange market for strikers. So I feel like Haaland will make his decision to go somewhere, and then we're going to see all the clubs who missed out on Haaland go back crazy, I think.
Yeah, and it's going to be a real sort of like, who's go where, when, like, there's going to be a lot of striker moves this summer, I think.
Should we have a quick look at the other free agents?
I've listed some down here. I've left off Mbappe and Pogba, but Henry, looking at this list here of some names I've put up, who are the ones who are catching your eye? Are there any obvious kind of moves in here?
Well, I was reading about Rudiger to Juventus. I actually quite like that. I think that is a smart move by...
For who?
Rudiger. Well, if they pay him a big fat wedge, then why not? He'll probably win a title. I think Belotti is going to be a really
interesting... Because he's better than Juventus and where they are right now. He's just better than that, I think.
Yeah, but
he's competing with Chelsea for the Premier League title, like the Champions League final
They can't extend his contract, so he has to start thinking about what he's going to do next.
Yeah, exactly. He's already won the Champions League. And actually, I look at that squad and I think, when Chiesa's back fit, with Vlahovic joining, with Locatelli settled, you look at that and you think, this is, again, not that many pieces away from being a really good side.
I completely agree with you. I think it's great. Okay. If he went there, it's not going to do anything for his... It's be great for his legacy. He's still going
to
Juventus.
It's just a step down. It's just a massive step down, in my opinion.
I do see that. I don't disagree.
One of the three or four best teams in Europe by like a distance at the moment, to a team that, you know, are like scratching around in Serie A and like a Europa League side at the moment.
Yeah,
but will probably get into the Europa Champions League like group stages.
From the rest of that list, I think Onana, I'm pretty sure he's going to go to Inter Milan to replace Handanovic. I think that's a great move for him. Yeah, that's fantastic. I would avoid Zagadou. I don't really rate Dan Axel Zagadou all that much. I think he's also quite injury prone as well. I'd be intrigued to see. I think he'll probably go to like a Europa League club, in all honesty. I think Tolisso, if he's out of contract this summer, that's someone that people should look at to get a pretty quality midfielder through the door. He's maybe been a bit unlucky over the years as well. But yeah, beyond that, I think also Belotti, and for any kind of Europa Leagues or top level club, I think Belotti would be an excellent, even Arsenal, if they had like a spare room in their budget for an extra striker. I think, Pat, you were talking about Kramaric at one point, getting him in as like a reserve forward. I think Belotti would work in equal measure. I think he's just really consistent. He's sort of in that kind of Ben Yedder category of just guys that just score goals wherever they seem to go. So I think he'd be certainly a good pickup for a team of that level.
Yeah, I mean, I would probably just re-up Lacazette rather than Belotti. and put more money into a first choice striker. Like, I see what you're saying. I think backup striker at Spurs to me just feels so Belotti. The combination of Paratici there and the fact that Belotti has never made good on his promise. He's always been like a totally fine striker, but he's never been a great one. I think that he would probably accept a rotation role at Spurs in return for an enormous pay packet, which he's never got at Torino. He needs that one last big paycheck, and this is opportunity to get it. Some of these other ones, I mean, Mazraoui has been linked with Man United, Joe, and obviously Lingard going out the door. What do you think about those?
Yeah, I think Lingard's like nailed on to leave. I think he'll just probably go to West Ham. I'd be very, very surprised if he doesn't go to West Ham in the summer. Or maybe, you know, maybe Tottenham. Maybe Tottenham as a potential like forward option. But then he might, if I was just in Lingard's head, I'd be thinking, I've got to be the nailed on starter. I have to be a nailed on starter. Yeah. And would he be a nailed on starter at Tottenham ahead of Kulusevski, Son and Kane? I think it's another rotation role. So I think if he went to West Ham, it's just a definite like starting role for him. I think for Mazraoui...
Let's talk of Bayern Munich, which I actually think makes just, a lot of sense.
It's just so dependent on who United have as manager, isn't it? Like, just all of it's up in the air until United confirm their manager. And I think it's very likely it's going to be Ten Hag now. Like, if that feels like the tap-in, doesn't it? It feels like Potter's gone extremely quiet, particularly post Champions League. So if it is Ten Hag, maybe he likes Mazraoui and he's worked with Mazraoui and says, okay, like, you can come in. I don't fancy Wan-Bissaka or I don't fancy Diogo Dalot. I know what you're getting straight away, but overall, it's too dependent on the manager to make a call on Mazraoui, especially when there's other clubs like Barcelona and that who are apparently interested.
Yeah, yeah. It would be interesting to see where all these players go. I mean, like, given that nobody really has money still, teams are still rebuilding their financial power, it's kind of nice that there are so many contracts running down so we actually get some drama this summer, because otherwise it could have been really bleak. So I think there are a lot of people here who are worth looking at, regardless of what your plans are as a club. And some of the complexions of sides could change completely with the additions of two or three free transfers, it seems.
Yeah, I can't remember a summer that had this many big names going for free.
No, neither can I. I mean, literally, one of the best players in the world, the best prospect in the world, going for nothing. That is genuinely
Pogba,
unbelievable.
Mbappe, yeah. Dybala, like Rudiger. I just don't remember this level of talent like on the market for £0. It's just player power development.
Want it on record that I did not call Dybala crap. Okay,
you implied he was crap.
You called him
very. I want that made very clear. He's a good player.
Look at him panicking now because the comments are onto him.
If you don't like what Henry said today about Paulo Dybala, then do make sure that you tweet at him. Just let him know how upset you are. Or if you live in Rome, then head over to the Rome Marathon and you can shout at him as he goes past or throw some at him or whatever you feel like.
Thank you. Yeah, that would be much appreciated.
Speaking of ill-advised comments, I think that we can round the show up with a little trip over to Everton, where Frank Lampard is already in full meltdown mode. Which I've got to say, I do love to see. There was obviously this 4-0 loss at Palace in the Cup for Everton at the weekend, a really embarrassing result. And after it, Frank Lampard really tore into his side. He said, there's only so much you can keep trying to do to butter someone up to get confidence. You're playing at the cutthroat end of football. This is the FA Cup quarterfinals. If you haven't got the confidence to play, you can flip it and say, have you got the bollocks to play? Apologies, but that's the football term. He then went on to say that actually his tactics were really effective, that Palace couldn't get out of their half in the first 20 minutes. Pretty much implying at this point, and I do think this is sometimes a problem with guys who were great players, sometimes they just don't understand why the players playing for them are not as good as they were. This was a criticism made of Henri when he was at Monaco. And I think he really had to kind of think about it afterwards, because sometimes these great players do just think, well, why doesn't he just, you know, beat three men and put it in the top corner or something? But here it feels like he's calling his players weak, cowardly. And I don't know, the wheels are already sort of coming off. Joe, how do you feel about Everton's prospects going into the run-in? And what do you think about what Lampard said? Because it does not seem... you'd want everyone to be pulling together in these circumstances. And when you look at the way that Jesse Marsh has landed at Leeds, there's such a clear contrast in the way that he is protecting his players.
Yeah. Like first and foremost, I think Everton are going to be safe. I just think the bottom three are just so doomed. So doomed.
I mean, they're pretty bad.
I think Everton will survive, and I think that Lampard doesn't really care which members of this squad he pisses off, to be honest with you, because if they survive, which, again, as I said, I think is likely, I think he's going to try and shift a lot of them in the summer, and I think Everton fans will be absolutely fine with that. I don't think Everton fans feel a particular affiliation with more than maybe two or three of this entire team, which is never a good place to be as a supporter of a football club. And I think Frank Lampard probably has come through the door and has been pretty shocked at the state he's found some of this squad in. So I think he's absolutely within his right to batter the squad if he doesn't particularly think that he's going to keep any of them next season, or many of them next season. I think it's going to be a pretty fresh Everton side next year that we're not totally recognised, and quite a lot of the players will be shipped out as long as they stay up. If they don't stay up and he's said all this stuff, then it's obviously a disaster, but I think they will.
But even then, I think, like, if you look at their schedule, they've got Palace, they've got West Ham away, they've got Man United, Liverpool away, Chelsea, Arsenal away. They've got Leicester. They've got a tough run in, and I think if they down tools and don't get points in a couple of their quote unquote easier fixtures, I'm not saying they're going to get relegated, but they're not. It could happen. And more importantly, if it ends up at a point where Lampard can't continue, because we also don't know whether Everton will be able to turn over the squad this summer, I don't know what his managerial career looks like after.
It is a big risk because I think I read earlier that Everton in the six of the seven games under Frank Lampard have accumulated less expected goals than the opposition, which is never a good place to be in, is it?
Yeah.
And it's a big risk from Frank Lampard. If it doesn't work, they get relegated, he's pissed off the entire squad, and he's then potentially out of a job in the Championship. I think it's a difficult place to recover his career without going to another Championship club. He's not going to be able to get another Premier League job from that position. So it's a big risk. But I don't think Everton fans... I think if you ask the Everton fans on the street what they thought of the squad, they'd probably have the same opinion as Frank Lampard. Put it that way. I think he is, to a level, speaking for a lot of what the fans think.
Yeah, but there's a difference there, isn't there? Like, I mean, if somebody in the Football Daily comment says, oh, Patrick's and his opinions are worthless, then that's one thing. But if my boss comes to me and says, you're a dead and your opinions are worthless, then I'm going to have a bit of an issue with it. I don't know, Henry, what's your take on this?
Brand of motivation, isn't it? He's trying that style of motivation. It doesn't necessarily work.
I
think it's not like this squad hasn't been here before. It's had multiple managers at this point. I don't think it's a case that they're going to react much differently because Frank Lampard's saying it, in all honesty. I think there's a reason they were looking at Vitor Pereira quite seriously as a candidate. At least someone, okay, maybe not so well known to the UK audience, but someone who's used to going into dressing rooms quite more frequently than Lampard in a managerial sense. I mean, I'm less convinced about their survival hopes. I think that game against Burnley that they've got coming up at Turf Moor is absolutely huge. I still think that Burnley have that weird ability to kind of dig out points when they need to, although, as you say, the bottom three is cast adrift. But I just think it was just genuinely really concerning to some of the things he was saying about how it's not his remit to try and switch something in their brains or something like that. That's what he was saying. It's kind of beyond him, his ability to do that necessarily, but also saying he was in charge of a lot of other things. I think to be kind of throwing the toys out the pram so early on I respect the kind of honesty with the press, but he has to be really careful, Lampard, in this situation. A lot of people were slightly nervous about this appointment going into it. Never really coached an incredible defensive side, and that's coming through again. And yeah, I do worry for Everton quite a lot. And I agree with you. I worry for Lampard too. I just don't think that this was necessarily, although if they survive, it's a great job for him because then he really gets a chance to get his teeth stuck into it. But at this moment in time, it looks very, very difficult. I mean, you said about Jesse Marsh going into Leeds and building affinity straight away. I think that's great. And you can see what Eddie Howe's done at Newcastle. He never once doubted the squad that he was given. And I think He's managed to elevate a lot of players that were previously written off under previous managers. And you have to say to Lampard, he has to be doing the same. And he just hasn't been able to do that so far.
Yeah, that's a reasonable point. It's actually Howe's effect at Newcastle. I mean, obviously he's made signings, but his effect there really does put into relief how bad things have been in the early returns under Frank Lampard. But who knows? Maybe it will work out. Maybe I just think that there's a generation of old pros who think that the only way to motivate players is the way that, like, Alex Ferguson used to motivate players. So you get Rio Ferdinand saying stuff like, oh, you know, the players have got to fear the manager, stuff like that. And I think, well, that's one way of doing it, but it's not the only way of doing it. No. And if it goes wrong, and it can really go wrong, then you look like a tool. Whereas if putting your arm around them and trying to encourage them goes wrong, then people can at least understand what you were doing there. I don't know. It just feels, I personally don't really like it when I see managers hanging players out to dry. It just doesn't. It always makes me question.
It don't sit well with you, does it?
Well, it always just makes me question. I don't think it's a thing that a quality manager does. It's as simple as that. I can't think of a single quality manager who does it. And I think that you can really clearly notice the turn in Mourinho's career when he stopped being a good manager and started being a crap one pretty much coincided with the point where he stopped pretty much creating nonsense stories in the press to protect his players and started just throwing players at the press as sacrificial lambs. So, yeah, I think it's generally a bad sign. But whatever, maybe I'm wrong. Who knows? Whether they stay up or not, maybe Frank Lampard goes on to become the greatest manager in Everton history. Who knows? But personally, not a fan. That brings us to the end of our show for today. Joe, is there anything that you'd like to plug before we say goodbye?
You can go and watch Sunday Vibes. Why not go and watch Sunday Vibes, where we talked a little bit about the England squad under Gareth Southgate. And it was quite controversial. The comments were heated, let's put it that way.
Interesting. What about you, Henry? Have you got anything that you'd like to point people towards?
Go check out the Football Pyramids clash between Sam Obaseki and I. Not much knowledge on display, but a lot of entertainment, and that's what the people want. He thought that the Cardiff's nickname was the Canaries, so that was an exciting.
Nice.
That was an exciting that question. Yeah, go check that out.
That is shameful.
That is.
I'm getting onto him about that immediately in the WhatsApp group. I'm clipping that out. That is shameful.
Pure Sam. Okay, well, thank you very much to you guys for appearing on the show today. Thank you to you at home for watching or listening. Make sure that you're subscribed to the podcast on YouTube at Football Daily Podcast, or that you're subscribed to us using your favorite podcast app, and we will see you next time. Bye.